Hello, I'm Christine, a newsreader on the Black Country Talking News, and this week's edition is for the 19th of May 2021.
Hello, and welcome to the Black Country Talking News, brought to you by Sightloss charity, Beacon Centre. A message to our listeners who receive the Talking News on CD in the post: this remains in paper envelopes, so there's still no need to send anything back to us. We're pleased to confirm that the Talking News is now available via Alexa. All you need to do is say, "Alexa, play Black Country Talking News." Our Talking News service is also available via the following methods: calling 01902 213 210, visiting our website www.beaconvision.org/talking-news, as a podcast on the Black Country Radio website www.blackcountryradio.co.uk/podcasts, on Spotify and Apple Podcasts by simply searching Beacon Black Country Talking News and hitting the subscribe button, and on your mobile or tablet device by downloading the free British Wireless for the Blind Talking News application from your App Store. We hope you enjoy this week's edition.
Thank you, Simon. And reading this week, we have myself, Rob, writer Graham Fisher, Mina, Ed, Craig, Helen, Simon, Liz, Christine, Ian, Angela, and of course, Flashback Roger. In this week's edition, we have an update from Beacon, some local news from the Black Country. We have the Flashback Quiz with Mina, news from West Bromwich Albion and Wolves, a Did You Know section from Flashback Roger, a look at the Black Country's Tiger King, the weather, an edition of Sounds of Nature, information about the Sightloss Council's Streets for All campaign, and rounding all that off, one of Graham Fisher's Tales from the Barn. But first we hear from Helen, who has for us information regarding the easing of lockdown restrictions.
From Monday, May 17th, indoor hospitality can reopen and indoor entertainment can resume, including cinemas, museums and children's play areas. Up to 6 people or 2 households will be able to meet indoors and up to 30 people outdoors. All remaining outdoor entertainment can reopen, such as outdoor cinemas and performances. The public can make informed personal decisions on close contact, such as hugging with their friends and family. International travel to green list countries can restart. Face coverings will no longer be needed in classrooms or for students in communal areas in secondary schools or colleges. All remaining university students will be eligible to return to in-person teaching. Up to 30 people are able to attend weddings, receptions and commemorative events. 30 people will be able to attend a support group or a parent and child group. The limit will not apply to children under the age of 5. Organised adult sport and exercise classes can resume indoors and saunas and steam rooms may reopen.
Thanks, Helen. Now we start with some local news, brought to us by Ian, Ed, Angela, and starting first, it's Christine.
City of Wolverhampton Council is working with city partners to ensure the safe reopening of indoor hospitality venues. The council's COVID business support, environmental health and licensing teams have been offering support and guidance to Wolverhampton's pubs and other hospitality businesses. Following recent government guidance, hospitality venues have been able to reopen indoors since Monday, provided they adhere to social distancing and safety measures that protect both staff and customers. It comes on the back of the smooth reopening of non-essential shops and outdoor hospitality since April the 12th, and is the culmination of a lot of hard work over many weeks by the Council's Reopening the High Streets Safely group in partnership with the police, Wolverhampton Business Improvement District and Bilston Business Improvement District. The group has worked closely with businesses to understand how shops and venues intend to operate safely and has provided critical advice, information and resources to help businesses get back on their feet. COVID support advisors and BID ambassadors are also out and about across the city to assist businesses and visitors. City of Wolverhampton Council leader, Councillor Ian Brookfield, said, "The hospitality sector has suffered financially during lockdown, and we all want and need hospitality venues to fully reopen safely. Pubs, bars and restaurants are having to take steps to operate effectively indoors, and we want to help where we can. It's about managing the experience for pub and restaurant visitors while mitigating any potential hazards or antisocial behaviour. A lot of the guidance relies on sensible cooperation between everyone to help ensure a safe and successful reopening. It's about ensuring businesses operate within the requirements and to support them with any planned changes. Customers must also play their part in following government guidelines to protect themselves and others."
Local people who are most vulnerable are to be offered their second COVID-19 vaccine earlier as part of plans to tackle rising cases of the B.1.617.2 variant of concern first identified in India. Appointments for a second dose of a vaccine will be brought forward from 12 to 8 weeks for the remaining people in the top 9 priority groups who have yet to receive their second dose. This is to ensure people across the Black Country and West Birmingham have the strongest possible protection from the virus at an earlier opportunity. The move follows updated advice from the independent experts at the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation, which has considered the latest available evidence on the variant and has recommended reducing the dosing interval to help protect the nation from the variant. People should continue to attend their second dose appointments where already booked, and nobody needs to contact the NHS. The NHS will let those who should bring their appointment forward know when they are able to do so. Those aged under 50 will continue to get their first dose with their second dose at 12 weeks, as has been the deployment strategy so far. Local health leaders have also urged people to let the local NHS respond to this new guidance, as vaccination sites have seen a rise in people calling and turning up today to rearrange their second doses. Sally Roberts said, "This move will ensure that those most vulnerable receive their second dose earlier. Please attend for your second dose when asked to do so. We will be in touch with you to make any necessary changes following the announcement yesterday."
Fresh cases of the Indian coronavirus variant have been found in the Black Country, with the strand of the virus now confirmed in Dudley. Health experts are focusing on two areas of the Dudley borough as a precautionary measure after three cases of the Indian variant were identified. Dudley Council bosses said they were tracking a very small number of cases of the B.1.617.2 Indian variant in Hales Owen and Briley Hill. People in those areas who have symptoms or who have been in contact with someone with a positive test are being urged to take a PCR coronavirus test, but there are no plans for additional testing. Meanwhile, residents and workers across the whole Dudley borough are being asked to remain vigilant, with rule changes coming into force which allow people to meet people from outside their household indoors and hug friends and family. Dudley Council said it would be monitoring the situation closely, but that Public Health England's advice was not to set up additional testing. Councillor Nicholas Barlow, Cabinet Member for Health at the Authority, said, "I would like to reassure people that at the moment there is no evidence to say that the variant puts people at greater risk, but we do know it has a higher transmission rate, which is why it's really important people get tested so that we can identify any further cases of this strain. This will help track undetected positive cases and prevent the spread of the virus any further. With restrictions easing, this is a reminder to us all that the virus is still with us and we need to proceed with caution. It's really important people continue to follow hands, face, space and fresh air guidance. Get tested regularly and have the vaccine when it's offered." A list of testing sites across the borough can be found on the council's website.
Vandals smashed windows and stole van keys from a Beacon charity shop, causing around £1,000 worth of damage. The Beacon Clearance Centre in Wolverhampton was broken into for the third time in 7 months on Friday night. The site in Lower Walsall Street is used as a warehouse and shop by the Beacon Centre for the Blind and was forced to close on Saturday due to the damage. Officers from West Midlands Police are now investigating the incident. Stella Pitt, Income Generation Director at the Sedgley-based Sight Loss Charity, said, "This is the third time we have been broken into. We had one at the end of November, one in December, and then this one happened overnight on Friday night and Saturday. It is devastating. We recently reopened after the difficult 12 months with the coronavirus pandemic. Waking up to that on Saturday morning was devastating. They smashed some windows of the offices and smashed the windows of some of the vans inside the warehouse. They took some van keys, so we will have to have them replaced. It is a shame people have to go to these lengths in their lives." She estimates the damage will cost around £1,000 to repair. Every week the shop has been closed during the pandemic, the charity has lost £9,500. Ms. Pitt added, "It has been difficult during the past 12 months, not least for the staff. It has been hard for them to have been on furlough." A spokesman for West Midlands Police said, "We're investigating a burglary at a charity shop. It happened on Lower Walsall Street sometime between 5:30 p.m. Friday night and 7:30 a.m. Saturday morning."
The hearing into an application for a new car cruising injunction for the Black Country has been adjourned. The applicants, Wolverhampton, Dudley, Sandwell and Walsall Councils and the West Midlands Police, took the decision to apply for an adjournment following the conclusion of a separate High Court hearing. That hearing related to a number of injunctions which, similar to the proposed car cruising injunction, are served against persons unknown. The applicants are reviewing the judgment handed down to that case to determine what impact, if any, it would have on the application for an injunction banning car cruising in the Black Country. David Patterson, Wolverhampton Council's Director of Governance, said, "We are of course disappointed to have to adjourn. However, in the light of the judgment being reached in other cases relating to injunctions served against persons unknown, it is right that we take time to review any ramifications it may have on our application. The car cruising injunction, first introduced in 2015, has proved incredibly effective in tackling this menace on our roads, but we know that the problem still persists in some hotspots. Across the Black Country, local councils and police continue to receive complaints about dangerous driving, excessive noise, littering, and people and vehicles obstructing highways and residential or business properties. Law-abiding drivers can also end up feeling intimidated when they inadvertently find themselves in the middle of a street race. It is important that the authorities have the powers they need to crack down on car cruising as and when it does occur. We hope to be able to return to the High Court in the near future with our application for a new car cruising injunction for the Black Country."
Three more local news bulletins coming up, but now it's time for our weekly update from Beacon.
Hi everyone, it's Helen from the Beacon Centre. How are you? Keeping well, I hope. It's been a big week for a lot of us, with the easing of more COVID-19 restrictions, including indoor gatherings of six people or two households, new guidance on meeting friends and family, outdoor gatherings of up to 30 people. To make sure you can stay informed, we have created an audio guide on our website. Just head to www.beaconvision.org/news. If you've been able to make the most of it, we hope you've enjoyed some of our newfound freedoms, but we also know that for some, probably myself included, it's a bit nerve-wracking to get back out into the world again. That worry can be even greater if you've got sight loss. So don't forget, if you need advice, you can always get in touch with our sight loss advisors, some of whom have lived experience. There's almost 200,000 people living with sight loss in the West Midlands, so you're not alone. Give our team a call on 01902 880 111 and see if they can help. This week, our fundraising team have been busy promoting our Loose Change campaign. Have you signed up yet? It's an easy way for your small change to make a big difference to people with sight loss. If you can save £6, it could help fund a 30-minute welfare call. As you may know, we've never needed your support more due to the impact of COVID-19 on our charity, which has seen us lose almost £700,000 in vital income over the last year. To get your loose change box and start making a difference for someone with sight loss today, email supportus@beaconvision.org with your name and address, and we'll get a box sent out to you. Alternatively, if you prefer, you could always give us a call on 01902 880111, Mondays to Fridays. Just ask for our fundraising team. Now, we may be getting out more than ever, but for some of us, the ability to access virtual activities is as important as ever. But from laughter yoga and a coffee catch-up to tech talks and wellbeing support, we've still got plenty to keep you entertained in our virtual timetable. You can find our schedule on our Facebook page. You just need to search for Beacon Centre. And if you'd like to find out more about our virtual activities and how to join one of the sessions, email kwilliams@beaconvision.org. That's kwilliams@beaconvision.org, or call 01902 880 111. That's it for this week. Hopefully, I'll be back to speak to you again soon.
Thanks for the update, Helen. Now we have some more local news, brought to us by Ed, Christine, Ian and Angela.
Our hospital boss said there would be no need for further measures to combat the Indian strain of COVID should there be a rise of cases in the Black Country. Diane Wake, Chief Executive of the Dudley NHS Trust, which runs Russell's Hall Hospital, said guidance within the health sector says that existing methods of infection control would be sufficient in dealing with the strain. Last week, Sandwell Council said there had been a probable case of the Indian variant found within the borough. There was also a case found in Tamworth, Staffordshire. Asked about how the Dudley NHS Trust would deal with the Indian variant of COVID, Ms Wake told the Trust's latest board meeting, "As far as we know, we haven't seen the Indian COVID variant in our hospital. How would we manage that? This is for any strain of COVID. It is about good infection prevention and control practices. It's about swabbing the patients on admission to understand their status, isolating them appropriately, but maintaining generally within the hospital good infection prevention and controls. This is social distancing, wearing of masks and different types of masks depending on what type of patient you're caring for, and hand washing is so important. Whatever the variant, we would have those basic principles in place."
Dudley residents could have access to another tip in the coming weeks after a deal was lined up with a neighbouring local authority. People in the borough have only been able to use the tip in Stourbridge since the start of April, after an agreement with Wolverhampton Council for Bilston's Anchor Lane tip broke down after a finance row. Dudley Council leader Patrick Harley has thrashed out a deal for Dudley residents to use the Shidas Lane tip in Oldbury, but Sandwell Council pulled out. Now, Councillor Harley says a new agreement with an unnamed neighbouring council was very close. He said the new plan would see residents in that council area able to use the Stourbridge tip under a shared agreement. Councillor Harley said, "We're confident that we will have a deal with a neighbouring authority very shortly. We are very close. It will benefit not only our residents, but their residents as well. So there will be a shared agreement where we can use their tip and they can use the one in Stourbridge. It will be very controlled. The other neighbouring authority's cabinet has got to meet to finalise it, but without the pressure of local elections, I'm sure we will have an arrangement in place very soon." A political row broke out over the use of the Anchor Lane site in the run-up to the elections. Labour-run Wolverhampton Council wanted to increase Dudley's fee by 66% to more than £330,000. Conservative-run Dudley Council described the increase as extortionate and refused to pay, meaning residents in the borough were left with access to only one tip. The deal for Anchor Lane was originally agreed in 2003, with the increased charge of £200,000 a year coming into effect in 2008. Wolverhampton Council argued that the increased charge was fair, given the high usage levels of the tip by Dudley residents.
The leader of Wolverhampton Council has laid out his priorities for the year ahead, with firing up the stalled West Side scheme towards the top of his list. Councillor Ian Brookfield said the £55 million development, which will see shops, restaurants, leisure activities and a multiplex cinema take over land around Salop Street, had been held up by the pandemic. But he said today that the council's plans for the site had been increased, not diminished. He announced that talks are taking place with a major international chain over opening a hotel in the city, while movement was expected soon on a deal with Odeon. Work was due to start last summer on West Side, but it was put on hold due to COVID. It led to fears the scheme could become the next Summer Row, a major retail development in the city that was scrapped in 2011 in the wake of the financial crisis. Councillor Brookfield said West Side was a key part of the £4.5 billion investment the council was looking to deliver to improve infrastructure and boost businesses. He said, "If we didn't have the last 18 months, it would probably be halfway built by now. COVID has stopped it, but I'm looking forward to getting that part of the city sorted out. Our plans for that area are increased, not diminished." Councillor Brookfield said Odeon was very much still in the mix to build the cinema that will underpin the scheme, but said other operators could well be sounded out. "During the pandemic, I don't think any of the major cinema chains spent any capital at all on starting new projects," he said. "With cinemas starting to reopen, they will be getting their cash flow back and we'll be talking to operators to get that part of the development underway." Councillor Brookfield said the year ahead would be massive for the city in terms of regeneration, citing the I-54 expansion, the completion of the transport interchange and the long-awaited conclusion of work on the civic halls, which are due to reopen in early 2022.
A police boss has called on people across the West Midlands to share their views on crime and policing in the region. The region's Police and Crime Commissioner, PCC, Simon Foster, said it was crucial to hear from members of the public. The feedback will form part of a new police and crime plan to set out the priorities for his 3-year term in the role. Mr. Foster, who comfortably won the seat for Labour earlier this month, said, "I have pledged to recruit 450 police officers and to place them in local communities across the West Midlands. I will also fight violent crime and domestic abuse. Whilst I have a very clear idea of the areas we need to improve on at West Midlands Police to ensure people's safety and security in the region, I also need to hear what your priorities are too." The Police and Crime Plan is a legal document required by law and will shape the PCC's 3-year term. A regular term is normally 4 years, but the pandemic delayed voting by 12 months. Mr. Foster has already committed to ensuring 450 new police officers are recruited and deployed to streets across the region. He also wants to crack down on both knife crime and domestic abuse. PCCs are responsible for setting the police budget and have the power to raise some funds through council tax, but the majority of West Midlands Police's budget comes from central government. To have your say, visit www.westmidlands-pcc.gov.uk.
A woman from King's Wimford has been banned from dealing in dogs for 3 years for selling puppies without a licence. Stacey Skeet of Blaze Park appeared before Dudley Magistrates Court, charged with offences including breeding dogs and selling them without a licence. The prosecution followed intelligence-led investigations into the unlicensed sale of puppies in the West Midlands area. It was heard Skeet, 41, had advertised a litter of chocolate Labrador puppies. She said she had advertised a litter of Cocker Spaniel puppies for friends. But a spokesperson on behalf of Animal Protection Services, which brought the prosecution, said, "Trading of puppies without a licence is not acceptable. The undermining of the statutory licensing regime is a risk to animal welfare and consumer protection. The illegal puppy trade has become a low-risk, high-reward trade, and we are determined to ensure that opportunists and organised criminals are brought before the court to face justice. Skeet pleaded guilty to 3 charges and was ordered to pay a £720 fine and disqualified from dealing dogs for 3 years. She was also ordered to pay a contribution of £500 towards investigation costs. Animal Protection Services is a registered charity that investigates and prosecutes organised animal cruelty.
Now we head over to Mina, who asked us the questions for this week's quiz.
Hello and welcome to the Flashback Quiz. All the answers you need can be found later in Flashback, Roger's Did You Know feature. But for now, here are your questions. Are you ready? Question 1. What is trypophobia, the fear of? Question 2. Which is wider, Australia or the moon? Question 3. What is the national animal of Scotland? Question 4. Why is it difficult to sing the words to the Spanish national anthem? Question 5. What famous structure grows taller in the summer? And question 6. How much did Sotheby's get for a bottle of Plonk in 2018? As always, I'll be back to reveal the answers later in the show. But for now, good luck.
Thanks for those questions, Mina. And coming up next, we have some more local news, brought by Ed, Christine, Angela, and first up, it's Ian.
The next stage of the major development around Wolverhampton Royal Hospital has been approved by council chiefs. The plans include transforming the site of the derelict former hospital into almost 200 homes as part of wider plans to make the area a key gateway to the city centre. Planning permission has been approved for the hospital 2 years after work started on the old Cleveland Road bus depot next door, which is now nearing completion. Building work on the city centre was temporarily paused due to COVID last year, but the progress can be clearly seen from the ring road at Bilston Street Island. The homes already built overlook the main road, around 100 metres from the 19th century hospital, where 192 flats are to be built under the £32 million scheme. The project is being led by Jessop, who was awarded the project by Homes England in partnership with Midlands landlord WHG. It will see the main hospital building, which closed in 1997, converted into a well-being scheme for over 55s, made up of 38 one- and two-bedroom apartments. A further 123 flats will be built for affordable rent and 31 for shared ownership will be built on the land behind the hospital. Jessop Chief Executive Clive Jessop said, "We are delighted that planning has been approved for the Royal Hospital site and we look forward to working with our development partners to deliver these new homes using our skilled local construction team and apprentices. Work at the Royal Hospital site is due to start on site this summer with a planned completion date of 2024.
8 new state-of-the-art trams have been shipped to the Black Country from Spain as part of a major expansion of the region's tram network. West Midlands Metro has taken delivery of the first of 8 third-generation Urbo trams shipped from the factory in Zaragoza, Spain. It arrived at the Metro depot in Wednesbury on a 40-metre-long lorry driven under escort. The vehicle, which weighs 45.5 tonnes, was then carefully lowered down a specially built ramp onto the track. The trams are arriving in the West Midlands over the next few months and the first 5 will be put into service later this year, ready for the extended lines in Birmingham and Wolverhampton to be opened. A further 13 trams will be delivered in 2023 ahead of the opening of the extension being built between Wednesbury and Briley Hill. The bright blue livery trams are able to run under power from overhead electric cables while recharging the onboard battery ready for cable-free sections of track. Mayor of the West Midlands, Andy Street, said these are incredibly exciting times for the Metro in the West Midlands as we undergo a huge expansion of the network after decades of underinvestment. With the extension to the west side of Birmingham nearing completion, and diggers in the ground on both the Wednesbury to Briley Hill and Birmingham East Side extensions, it is clear we are going to need significantly more trams in service as we attract more and more people onto the metro. Not only are our trams a quick and easy alternative to the car, but they're also far more environmentally friendly, helping to reduce air pollution and tackle the climate emergency. The purchase of the 21 vehicles was part of an £83.5 million deal signed in 2019 between West Midlands Metro and manufacturer CAF. Also included is technical support and battery management services over 30 years, as well as an option to purchase a further 29 trams as the network grows.
Union members at a wheelchair factory in Dudley are to vote over possible strike action in a dispute over pay. Unite has warned of impending industrial action if the ballot of workers at Sunrise Medical in Thorns Road, Brierley Hill, is in favour of striking. The union says that the workers have worked hard in recent years to support Sunrise Medical through major organisational change, the COVID-19 pandemic and Brexit. They are seeking at least a 3% increase in pay and an additional day of holiday for Christmas Eve. Unite says that due to the management's unsatisfactory response and a breakdown in the pay talks, workers feel they have no option but to ballot for industrial action. The company was contacted over the union's claims but said it did not wish to comment. Unite regional officer Sue Lowe said, "The workforce at Sunrise Medical have repeatedly gone the extra mile to ensure that the company is a success. However, despite their dedication and commitment, even the loss of a colleague to COVID, management has failed to support their aspirations for a pay rise. As a result, members of Unite at Sunrise Medical believe they have been left with no option but to ballot for industrial action. If strike action does occur, it will inevitably cause serious disruption to the supply of electric wheelchairs and will cause concern to the company's customers. Unite believes that this dispute can still be resolved via negotiation, but in order to do so, Sunrise Medical needs to make a realistic pay offer. The door is open, we just need the company to step up." Sunrise Medical, which started in 1983, was originally based in High Street, Wollaston.
Plans for a new multi-million pound state-of-the-art special school in Dudley have been lodged with council bosses. The proposal could see Dudley Council build a £12 million special school on the site of the former Pensnet High School. If approved, it would provide education for 115 children and young people aged between 3 to 19 years old. It could replace the existing Penns Meadow Special School, which already provides education for pupils with complex needs, including autism and pupils with profound and multiple learning difficulties, across two sites. Plans for the new school include an on-site nursery and an assisted living block to support young people with independent living and full catering facilities. The new school would also provide state-of-the-art equipment, therapy rooms, hydrotherapy pool, changing facilities, outdoor teaching and play areas, community group facilities and 14 bespoke classrooms specifically designed to cater to children with additional needs. The new school has been designed by the council's project design and delivery team within corporate landlord services. Councillor Patrick Harley, leader of Dudley Council, said, "These are exciting and ambitious plans to build a school that will provide the best facilities for pupils in every stage of their education and development."
Plans have been submitted for a new holiday complex to help boost tourism in South Staffordshire and the Black Country. The scheme will see 35 holiday lodges built on greenbelt land to the east of Ashwood Lower Lane near King's Wynford. The 3.3-acre site, which sits next to the River Stour, will also feature a shop, space for car parking and a toilet/shower block. A design and access statement from RCA Regeneration Limited, accompanying the plans, says the development will serve local tourist attractions, including Ashwood Marina. It says the proposals will also create a new access junction from Ashwood Lower Lane into the site. The development includes 19 smaller chalets, 10 of medium size and 6 large lodges. Each one will have a living area, a kitchen and either two or three bedrooms, plus a bathroom and space for at least two cars. The statement says, whilst the proposals constitute new development within the Green Belt, which is strictly controlled, they will be single-storey and constructed from natural materials, ensuring that they blend effortlessly within the landscape. The proposed development proposes to enhance the tourism offer in the location of King's Wynford. Adjacent to the marina, none of the chalets are proposed to be occupied year-round, and the applicant is willing to accept an appropriately worded occupancy condition to any permission granted.
Coming up next, we have a message from Sight Loss Councils regarding their Streets for All campaign.
My name is Rhiannon and I'm 27 years old. I'm registered blind. My experience with e-scooters has been interesting, to say the least. For example, one of my experiences very recently was I was going on a socially distant walk with one of my friends, and we were walking down quite a narrow pavement, and I could just sort of see this irregular green flashing, which I know is the e-scooter, and the light happens to be up near the handlebars. So I knew that the handlebars were propped somewhere on the fence next to me, but I didn't know where the rest of the scooter was, whether it was sticking out or whether it was along the side of the fence, to the point where my friend had to grab me and physically pull me out of the way so I didn't fall over it. And usually I don't require a guide, so it was quite disorientating and quite, like, just shocking to be grabbed and moved out of the way. But obviously she had to, because otherwise I was going to go base over apex over this e-scooter that was stuck out into the middle of the pavement. Also, by the train station is a real problem, because they're supposed to be, I don't know, for want of a better word, I guess like a docking station for them, between these two sort of skyscraper buildings. But no one ever puts them there properly. They're just kind of just chucked there and left all about the pavement, and it's right by quite a busy road, and I have had to sort of obstacle course my way around them before in attempt not to fall over and end up, you know, falling into another person, falling onto the pavement, or, you know, worst case scenario, falling out into the road. I would say that the impact that my experiences with e-scooters has had on me and my sort of commute is that it has made me more anxious. You don't know where they're going to come from. You don't know where they're going to be. It's another thing, you know, I feel now that I have to be hypervigilant. It is very anxiety inducing, and I think that's, you know, wrong. Something needs to be done to stop that impact on other people.
Incidents of badly parked e-scooters are on the rise. As Rhiannon's experience shows, this is unacceptable and unsafe for visually impaired pedestrians. Help us raise awareness by sharing photos and videos of badly parked e-scooters on Twitter using the hashtag #StreetsForAll. E-scooter operators need to act and clamp down on irresponsible parking. We'll share your pictures with operators to raise awareness of this issue. Remember, tweet us using the hashtag #StreetsForAll.
Coming up next, we have our final block of local news. And starting us off, it's Angela.
A refreshing idea has taken wings in Briarley Hill, where a weekly club has been formed in Albion Street. New Friends was started by Barbara, who wanted to help folks who, as she puts it, are fed up with the weather, fed up with the telly, and fed up with their own company. She thought of those who are lonely through bereavement or just plain lonely and spend hours or days without seeing and talking to another person. She posted her idea on Facebook and has been astounded by the response. So she's booked a room in the storehouse in Albion Street and invites all interested to come along for an evening of friendly chat, and New Friends is becoming a regular meeting place for like-minded people. "No two meetings seem the same," said Barbara, "as it never matters who turns up. They're always guaranteed a warm welcome, a cuppa and a good natter. Very often the evening can descend into mayhem, with games of bingo, beetle or a good quiz, turning adults into kids for a few hours of laughter. There's no alcohol during the evening, and Barbara says that the event is not intended as a dating agency, but a warm welcome is promised and new friends are made. The storehouse has facilities for those less able, and the meetings are held on the ground floor. The first week is free, and subs are just £1 per week. There is a small charge made for the refreshments. Barbara says everyone finds it hard at first to turn up alone, but when they brave up and make the move, the difference an evening of company makes is a huge change to people's lives. New Friends Group is held every Wednesday evening at 8 p.m. at the Storehouse, Albion Street, Briley Hill, DY5-3EE, and all are welcome. If you would like to find out more, then take a look at their Facebook page by searching Storehouse New Friends.
The Lighthouse Cinema will be welcoming guests through its doors once again this summer. It's been 14 months of darkness since Wolverhampton's Lighthouse Cinema closed its doors to audiences, and with restrictions on indoor gatherings lifting this month, the venue is excited to announce its reopening on Friday the 11th of June. The opening screening will show two award-winning films, Sound of Metal and Nomadland. Staff have been working to ensure the venue in the city centre's landmark Chubb Buildings has COVID safety protocols in place, thanks largely to a successful crowdfunding campaign that launched at the beginning of the pandemic and a safety grant from the BFI. The cinema has an award-winning lineup of films scheduled, ready for audiences who have craved the big screen during lockdown, including Oscar winners The Father, Minari and Judas and the Black Messiah. Bosses are also planning for the return of the theatre, opera and ballet screenings that were popular with audiences before the shutdown. Kelly Jeffs, Lighthouse CEO, said ahead of the reopening, "When we closed the doors to the Lighthouse back in March 2020, we had no idea it would be over a year before we could be seeing audiences here again. We can't wait to welcome everybody back, and we've been preparing to make the Lighthouse as safe as possible, while still keeping that special cinema atmosphere that people have been missing. Helping our local communities to recover and continue to play an important part in Wolverhampton's cultural offer is absolutely critical, and we'll be ready with our warm welcome."
Robert Plant is set to bring his band Saving Grace to the Black Country for a special show this summer, it has been announced. The show will come to Dudley Town Hall on Monday, July 26. Saving Grace is a cooperative including West Bromwich-born Plant and Susie Deanne on vocals, Ollie Jefferson on percussion, Tony Kelsey on mandolin, baritone and acoustic guitars, and Matt Worley on banjo, quattro, acoustic and baritone guitars. Tickets for the show go on sale at 10 a.m. on Friday and are expected to be booked up quickly. Plant, who was the lead singer of Led Zeppelin, lives near Kidderminster. Alex Jackson, booker for Dudley Borough Hall, said, "It is a huge thrill and a privilege to announce the return to Dudley Borough Halls of this phenomenal band. Saving Grace treated us to a spellbinding performance at Stourbridge Town Hall back in December 2019, so we are absolutely delighted that they've chosen to take to the stage for an even bigger show at Dudley Town Hall. This promises to be another memorable evening in the company of a sublime collective of astonishingly talented musicians. We can't wait to throw open our doors for the first time in well over a year, and this is a really special way to be able to welcome back our audiences."
Wolves legend Steve Bull came face to face with his namesake, a mechanical rodeo beast, when he was invited to pop along to a new eatery set to open in the heart of Wolverhampton. The former Wolves centre forward and England player motioned on down to the rodeo's barbecue, but he could have been forgiven, thinking he had stepped into the old Wild West. It was here Steve was encouraged to tackle the rodeo bull, and he quickly managed to master the technique. Steve said it's a family-friendly venue. If the guys get on over here to take on Stevie the Bull, I don't fancy their chances. Simon Parton, the 46-year-old man, realised the ambition of creating a unique dining experience for customers by creating a cowboy tale in his restaurant. The Lodge Music venue, which officially opens on Wednesday, also sees staff dressing the part to ensure the right feel-good atmosphere is maintained, and there will also be a sheriff in charge. Opening from 12 p.m. to 11:30 p.m., with last bookings at 8:30 p.m., Rodeos feature seating pods based on three wagons, and the good, the bad and the ugly, as a nod towards the spaghetti westerns. A banker jailhouse with two stalls, stables, a sheriff's office and blacksmith's workshop, which will form the backdrop of the live country and western music sessions.
A popular antiques fair will return to a Black Country park later this week. The Antiques and Collectors Fair, which is always well attended, will be held at Himley Hall in Dudley on May the 23rd. It follows the success of the fair in April at the same place, where hundreds of people attended. The fair has the grounds of Himley Hall as a backdrop and attracts traders from across the UK. Organiser of the event, Vicky Rosen, said, "We are delighted that the fairs can return on a regular basis, and as the one in April proved, they are as popular as ever. It was wonderful to welcome back traders and the public. We look forward to May the 23rd and thank everyone in advance for their support. The fair will run between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. Admission costs £2, while those under 16 can enter for free."
Now it's time to hear from Flashback Roger, who asked for us some more amazing facts.
Hello everyone, here we are again, ready and willing, I hope, for a new set of facts and articles to enjoy and share. So off we go. This week I'll start with this one, so pay attention, you'll be tested on them later. Did you know that trypophobia is the fear of closely packed holes? Or more specifically, an aversion to the sight of irregular patterns or clusters of small holes or bumps. No crumpets for those suffering from that one then. Never mind, all the more for me. Australia, believe it or not, is wider than the moon. The moon sits at 3,400 kilometres in diameter, while Australia's distance from east to west is almost 4,000 kilometres. And this is a little interesting one and something that I've always wondered about. The ancient Romans used to drop a piece of toast into their wine for good health. Hence, that's why we raise a toast. And the unicorn is the national animal of Scotland. It was apparently chosen because of its connection with dominance and chivalry, as well as purity and innocence in Celtic mythology. The Spanish national anthem has no words. The Marcha Real is only one of four national anthems in the world, along with those of Bosnia and Herzegovina, Kosovo and San Marino. You know, when I watch sporting things where they play an anthem, I've often thought that the standing players weren't very patriotic because they didn't sing. But now I know better. The Eiffel Tower can be 15 centimetres taller during the summer due to thermal expansion as the iron heats up and the whole thing gets taller. So, if you're asked in a quiz how tall the Eiffel Tower is, you can say, "Do you want to know the summer or the winter dimensions?" And you can look a right clever dick. A 73-year-old bottle of French Burgundy became the most expensive bottle of wine ever sold at auction in 2018. It went for £439,300. The bottle of 1945 Romani Conti sold at Sotheby's for more than 17 times its original estimate. And finally, the Japanese words kuchi zamishi is the act of eating when you're not hungry, because they say that the mouth is lonely. I do this all the time. No wonder I put weight on. At least I can say I'm being considerate to me poor old lonely gob. And with that final note, I think I'll slip off for a bacon sarnie, because my mouth is crying out for company, and I don't like to disappoint. So till next week, I'll sign off. This is Rod saying bye for now. Ta-ra a bit.
Thanks, Roger. Now we head over to Mina with the weather forecast for the week ahead.
The weather for this week ahead looks to be a washout with rain expected all week. Temperatures will start at around 13 degrees and will gradually rise as the week progresses. UV levels are expected to be moderate throughout the week. The sunrise and sunset times are 4:59 a.m. for the sunrise and 9:12 p.m. for the sunset. For Friday 21st of May through to Sunday 23rd of May, we have light rain showers and a moderate breeze with a maximum temperature of 13 degrees. On Monday 24th of May, we have light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 15 degrees. On Tuesday 25th of May, we have light cloud and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 16 degrees. On Wednesday 26th of May, we have light rain and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 18 degrees. And on Thursday 27th of May, we have sunny intervals and a gentle breeze with a maximum temperature of 17 degrees. So that's your forecast for this week. As always, enjoy the weather.
Thanks that, Mina. Now we head to some more sounds of nature, which this week is brought to us by Ed.
A migratory bird, the osprey is present in the UK in the summer. Ospreys eat fish, catching them in a spectacular fashion as they dive towards lakes and lochs, stretch out their talons and scoop them out from the water with ease. The osprey is a brown and white bird which could possibly be mistaken for a seagull at a distance. Their heads are white with a dark brown through their eyes. Their wings during flight show strong bearing and distinctively dark brown angled wrists. They nest in parts of Scotland, Cumbria, the East Midlands and Wales, and can be spotted at large water bodies across the country during their migration.
This recording was made by Lawrence Shove and was made available by the British Library. Coming up next, we have Ian with the sport.
Hello, I'm Ian and here's your latest football news. Lapses in defensive concentration cost Wolves as they fell to a 2-0 defeat away at Tottenham Hotspur. The visitors were resolute at the back for much of the first half, but switched off on the stroke of half-time to allow Harry Kane to tuck home the opening goal. Then, on the hour mark, sloppy play from Kjana Hoover allowed Pierre-Emile Højbjerg to slide in and add the second. Wolves had some chances of their own, mainly created by Adama Traore, but in reality they struggled to create going forward, as they were condemned to defeat. After the match, Nuno expressed his disappointment at the manner of Spurs' first goal. When asked if that moment was the turning point in the game, Nuno said yes, because in the first half we were organised. We didn't allow many situations. Tottenham gave us pressing and set pieces into the box. But besides that, we were controlling well. Tottenham have very good players, but the turning point was the first goal. I'm really disappointed with the manner of it. A simple pass that breaks all the lines, we cannot allow that. Nuno Espirito Santo made four changes to his side following the 2-1 triumph over Brighton. Romain Saiz, Nelson Semedo, Leandro Dendonca and Traore all came into the side as Max Kilman, Rayan Aïnouri and Ruben Neves all dropped to the bench. Daniel Podence was not involved in the squad due to an injury. Albion were hugely unfortunate to be beaten by Liverpool at the Hawthorns, with goalkeeper Alisson incredibly scoring for the visitors in the final seconds of the game. The Baggies, whose relegation to the Championship was confirmed last weekend, took a first-half lead against Jurgen Klopp's side thanks to an excellent finish from Hal Robson-Kanu. Liverpool equalised through Mo Salah, but while they went on to dominate possession, they struggled to break down the Baggies, who defended brilliantly throughout. After the interval, a hugely controversial moment involving VAR arguably cost Sam Allardyce the win. From a corner, Kyle Bartley flicked in a header from Semi Ajayi, but the goal was disallowed due to Matt Phillips being stood in an offside position, despite it not looking as though the winger was interfering with play. Needing a goal to keep alive their hopes of qualifying for the Champions League, Liverpool pushed for a winner in the closing stages. Trent Alexander-Arnold should have won, but fired over with minutes to spare. But with seconds to go, Liverpool did win it in bizarre circumstances. Having to throw the kitchen sink at it, the visitors sent Alisson forward for a corner, and he met Alexander-Arnold's delivery with a brilliant header that flew into the corner.
Thanks for that, Ian. And coming up next, we have Liz, who asked for us a feature on the Black Country's Tiger King.
Lions at the Disco and Gorillas in the Garden. How a businessman became the Black Country's Tiger King. Getting no reply from the front door, he spotted the gate and thought he would try his luck round the back. On entering the back garden, he was chased into the road by one of Mr. Foley's lions, forcing him to take refuge in a parked lorry. It is not known whether Mr. Foley bought any encyclopedias. While the Netflix series Tiger King focused on the colourful life of American big cat trainer Joe Exotic, back in the 1970s, Lou Foley was the Black Country's own Tiger King. As well as numerous lions and a tiger called Winston Churchill, the eccentric businessman also kept a gorilla in his garden and a crocodile in the bath. Back in the 70s, Lou and his equally idiosyncratic friend Leslie Maiden, a lion tamer known as One-Eyed Nick, basked in the roles of minor celebrities, courting publicity wherever they went and irritating the authorities in equal measure. When his activities attracted the attention of Sandwell Council, he turned up to a meeting with a hefty lion cub in his arms. The incident with the encyclopedia salesman landed Lou in court, charged with a breach of the peace, prompting him to turn up for the hearing in full evening dress, while his lion tamer sat in the public gallery dressed as a cowboy. Living most of his life in Cradley Heath, although he also variously lived in Dudley, Smethwick and Lye, he became a familiar sight walking Winston the tiger around the streets of suburbia on a chain or driving them around in the back of his large American estate car. Dave Malpas remembers when he turned up with a lion at a Saturday night disco at the Summerhill pub in King's Swinford. He took it on the stage, he recalls. Barmy Barry the DJ nearly crapped himself along with loads of screaming women. He regularly appeared at shows and fetes with his animals and took them in for a pint at the various pubs he frequented. He appeared on a local news bulletin brushing his first lion Lado with a broom, and when Winston was a cub, he took him to the Heath Tavern pub for a photo call behind the bar. While in the 1960s there was a bit of a fad for the very wealthy to keep big cats as pets, Lou said it was a spate of break-ins at his house which convinced him of the need for a bit of extra security. I used to work all over the country, and while I was away, my house was broken into 3 times, and my kids were beaten up, he said in a 2003 interview. I checked on the law to find out how I could put these burglars off, and I thought I would get a lion, a wild lion, his frown turning into a broad grin. He put up a warning sign, but it still wasn't enough to put one determined individual off. It said on the gate, which was 8 foot high, beware of the lion. But this Scotsman came and he climbed over, he said, adding that the lion held the man in his mouth. The police came with shotguns and I had to go into the cage with half a pig to help get the lion off him. His first lion was called Lado, but he soon added a lioness called Sheba, and gradually his back garden zoo began to expand. Winston the tiger joined him in 1976, and one morning that year, at the height of the blistering summer, Lou woke up to find 2 more cubs abandoned on his doorstep. He would regale anyone who listened with tales about how he rescued animals from circuses, and there were plenty of people who were fascinated by his unusual pets. School children would stand on walls to get a glimpse of the big beasts, and stories of them roaring at passers-by were legendary. Wendy Palmer remembers going on a school coach past his house to the nearby Haddon Hall swimming pool. We always used to try and get the coach driver to stop so we could see if the lion was out in the garden, she says. But while his activities may have been entertaining, the authorities, and Sandwell Council in particular, quickly grew weary of his unusual hobby. Planning enforcement action was taken against him over the cages he had built behind his house, and he would regularly appear before his local magistrates with one or more of his big cats in tow. But it was the incident with the encyclopedia salesman which proved the final straw, leading to Parliament passing its 1976 Dangerous Wild Animals Act, which effectively outlawed keeping big cats as pets. The law led to several owners of big cats releasing their animals into the wild, fueling the regular sightings and speculation about such animals residing in our countryside. Lou reputedly released at least two lions onto the Malvern Hills, although this was never substantiated. But while the Dangerous Wild Animals Act may have stopped him keeping lions at his home, there was never any danger of him leading a peaceful retirement. No longer able to keep big cats in his garden, he started keeping heroin addicts there instead. He reckoned he could help addicts overcome their habit by chaining them up in caravans at the back of his house until the craving ceased, and produced at least one client who reckoned this rather drastic therapy had worked. Following the death of Diana, Princess of Wales, he opened a hostel for the homeless in her memory, which also saw him fall foul of the authorities. When he was ordered to appear before the magistrates, he changed his name by deed poll to Sir Anti-Corruption UK and insisted on being addressed by that name in court. He died in 2009, aged 70.
Thanks for that, Liz. It's now time to find out how many questions you got right in our flashback quiz. So, Mina, do you have the answers all lined up for us?
I certainly do. So here are your answers for this week's flashback quiz. Are you ready? Question 1. What is trypophobia, the fear of? The answer, tightly placed holes. Question 2. Which is wider, Australia or the moon? And the answer is Australia. Question 3. What is the national animal of Scotland? And the answer here is unicorn. Question 4. Why is it difficult to sing the words to the Spanish national anthem? And the answer, there aren't any. Question 5. What famous structure grows taller in the summer? And the answer here is the Eiffel Tower. And finally, question 6. How much did Sotheby's get for a bottle of Plonk in 2018? And the answer was $439,300. How did you do? Fantastically, I'm sure. But if not, there's always another chance to have a go next week. Now, to end this week's edition of the Black Country Talking News, it's time to visit Graham Fisher to hear one of his tales from the barn.
Hello. I confess to standing accused of strangling guitar since my early teens. I now restrict my musical anarchy to private functions and personal amusement, but back in the day, I frequently attended and often ran music clubs. I was consistently impressed by the support of butchers, bakers, candlestick makers, and a panoply in between of people for whom playing an instrument was the solace of a mere dilettante, but whose talents relegated mine squarely to the touchlines. Raw ability, sometimes sheer virtuoso brilliance, was commonplace, and I was routinely taken aback by someone who may have spent his or her day wielding a wrench, stacking shelves in a supermarket, or teaching the next generation, before then demonstrating some alternate sublime musical skill at night that, outwardly, no one would ever have correlated. And the thought that always struck me was that for every one of my clubs there must have been hundreds, thousands around the country doing exactly the same thing. So, and here's the cynic emerging, why do the same half a dozen faces keep appearing on my television screen? Rather like Maslow's hierarchy of need, a motivational theory in psychology comprising a model of human requirements depicted as hierarchical levels within a pyramid, one might loosely consider the postulate as a model of recognition and accomplishment. There is one figure who, having risen to the head, thus denies all of those in the ever-broadening layers below the chance to share it. My more utopian GF rectilinear tower block of attainment, which doesn't actually exist, with a platform of spaces at the top that can be shared, would arguably be a much more equitable model. But hey, life doesn't work like that. How so? Well, hands up all those who recall the first man on the moon being Neil Armstrong and his one giant leap for mankind. Now, who was the second? And the third? The fourth? I see arms dropping like stones as we descend that pyramid, the curious phenomenon of an identical achievement markedly recollected only by dint of the one at the peak hogging the sweet spot. C'est la vie. Visitors to Stourbridge can enter the Crown Centre via the entrance off the High Street to be confronted, if that's the correct word because they're actually overhead, by a sprawling collection of ceiling adornments courtesy of monumental metal sculptor Luke Perry, depicting the great and the good associated with the area. These include the likes of author J.R. Tolkien, cameo glass engraver John Northwood, Led Zeppelin singer Robert Plant, who once upon a time visited one of my aforementioned music clubs, Harry Potter's creator J.K. Rowling, gosh, modesty forfend, there's even one there for yours truly, which makes it all the more humbling because mine hangs close to one Frank Foley, a man whose boots I fear that in comparison with his mark on history, I would not be fit to lace. But who he? Who he indeed, although his achievements be memorable, he is yet several steps from the top of the pyramid and, ipso facto, is largely unrecognized outside his confines. Because blocking his progress to the pinnacle of Frank's pyramid is one Oscar Schindler, whose position there was probably cemented in perpetuity by Steven Spielberg's 1993 film Schindler's List. Oscar Schindler, 1908-1974, was a German industrialist and a member of the Nazi Party who is credited with saving the lives of 1,200 Jews during the Holocaust by employing them in his factories. His connections helped him protect his workers from deportation and death in the concentration camps. As war progressed, Schindler had to give Nazi officials ever larger bribes to keep his workers safe. By July 1944, the SS began closing down the easternmost concentration camps and deporting prisoners westward. Schindler convinced the commandant of a nearby camp to allow him to move his factory to the Sudetenland, thus sparing his workers from almost certain death. Schindler continued to bribe SS officials until the end of the war, by which time he'd spent his entire fortune on backhanders and black market purchases. After the war, Schindler moved to Argentina. He went bankrupt in 1958 and left his wife to return to Germany, where he relied on financial support from Schindlerjuden, Schindler Jews, the people who he had saved. Named as Righteous Among the Nations by the Israeli government in 1963, he was buried on Mount Zion, the only member of the Nazi Party to be thus honoured. What a story. What a film. But no such universal recognition as yet for Frank Foley. Major Francis Edward Foley, CMG, 1884-1958, was a British Secret Intelligence Service officer. As a passport control officer in Berlin, he helped thousands of Jews escape from Nazi Germany after Kristallnacht and before the outbreak of the Second World War. Originating from Somerset, following a colourful career, he retired to Stourbridge, where his exploits remained largely unheralded until 1961, when the Daily Mail carried his story, written by his widow. Foley is primarily remembered as the British Schindler. At the 1961 trial of Adolf Eichmann, he was described as a Scarlet Pimpernel, who is estimated to have saved tens of thousands of people. Mentioned in dispatches and the recipient of numerous awards, including the Companion of the Order of St. Michael and St. George, he was tasked with questioning Hitler's deputy, Rudolf Hess, after Hess's flight to Scotland. Like Schindler, Foley too was accorded the status of Righteous Among the Nations. He's buried in Stourbridge Cemetery, and a plaque at the entrance to Mary Stevens Park is dedicated to him. A 2007 film about his life didn't pass the planning stage, but he at least enjoys the honour of several naming ceremonies, including, peculiarly, a West Midlands bus. So, glancing down the pyramid slopes, how many more understated heroes of the Holocaust are out there just beyond our view? The question itself suggests its own answer. We may never know. But without the intervention of the likes of Mr. Spielberg, they and their ilk are fated never to attain the pinnacle of that pyramid resolutely occupied by Oskar Schindler. Enjoy your Black Country, and do join me again soon for more Tales from the Barn.
So that's it for another edition of the Black Country Talking News. A reminder to our CD listeners who have received CDs in padded envelopes that you don't need to send anything back to us. If you have a sight loss tip or someone you would like to wish a happy birthday to, just say hello to. Maybe even a poem or talking book you would like reviewed, then please get in touch with us at the Beacon Centre. Call 01902 880111. Email bctn@beaconvision.org or write to us at the Black Country Talking News, Beacon, Wolverhampton Road East, Wolverhampton, WV4 6AZ. We look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for listening, and thank you to all our supporters, donators and volunteers who without their support we would be unable to run this free service. Please note the information and views expressed in this recording does not necessarily represent the views of Beacon or Talking News and were accurate at the time of recording. Mentions of goods and services does not imply endorsement, and whilst every care is taken to supply accurate information, Beacon and Talking News do not undertake liability for any errors. So it's goodbye from all of us, stay safe, have a good week, and we look forward to bringing you next week's edition of the Black Country Talking News. Ta-ra!